And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This rainy Friday. Yeah, the rain's back, and it's going to be cold, or at least colder. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Good morning.
That's him. Marquise behind the glass.
That's me.
Hey, we can actually see you today. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
Well, actually, we technically could see you yesterday, but I think my eyes were closed half of the show.
I mean, it's that Hal Gill workout plan, man. It had you exhausted yesterday.
That is so between Hal Gill's workout and the turbulence coming back, that's probably what did me in. That was what really kicked my tail.
That's why me and Hal are working on this DVD on the outside. The outside of this show, obviously. The Kills Me Skillsy workout plan.
Kills Me Skills Me. Speaking of him, Kills Me Skills Me will... Will join us at 11 o'clock. He maybe should look into this workout video. You know, he could probably make some serious cash on the side. If people are into that stuff, and we know there's a lot of people that are.
Do people still watch workout DVDs, though, in 2019?
I don't know. That's a good question. Do they?
Do people watch DVDs?
That's another good question. Does anybody even own a DVD player?
I still have a DVD player. DVDs. I still have a player that has a VHS, just so, you know, if I want to get nostalgic and pull out, like, old...
Blu-ray, you don't know? Yeah, because I still do Redbox, so I have a Blu-ray. I watch videos.
I think we can make this happen.
Does anybody watch Richard Simmons anymore? Does anybody work out to Richard Simmons?
Who's the other guy? There's another.
Who's the other guy?
There's a lot of guys.
There's been a ton of guys.
When I was growing up on ESPN, they used to have a guy, Jalad. Was that his name? Bodies in Motion with Jalad.
You got me on
like
this one.
If you're like, okay, we're talking early ESPN, right? We're talking like mid-80s, early 83, 84. You'd have your SportsCenter loop, right, with Chris Berman. And Tom Meese and, you know, all Greg Gumbel back in the day. And then, you know, ESPN had some time to fill. You know, it was before you have all this Stephen A. Smith and all the talking heads just yapping at each other and making up stuff and doing whatever they do. And so they had Bodies in Motion with Jalad.
I know what was
the woman's name? They had a woman, Denise Austin. Was that her name?
Yeah, Denise Austin, yeah.
And so, like, it was a mid-morning. It was, like, for the, you know, the people that were home. A lot of moms, maybe, or, you know, and they had jazzercise, aerobics kind of thing, but it was a good workout. They were on some beach or in Hawaii or something.
Course,
and
some nice setting.
Yeah.
It's never in a backyard.
And then they'd start looping. This was ESPN program. It was before ESPN2, ESPN News, and then you get to about midday, and they would have rodeo or a USFL game looped or a college basketball game they had the night before, right? I mean, they didn't have a whole lot.
Hal's video is a little bit different approach. Hal's, like, those were more upbeat, positive. Yeah, like, come on, you know, Richard Simmons, you can do it. Come on. Who's with me?
Right,
keep
right.
dancing. Come on. Come on. Keep, you can do it. You can do it. Yeah. Hal Gill's like, what are you doing? Let's go. Pick it up.
You're saying he's more Full Metal Jacket.
He is full metal. Right. He is more militant.
You know,
What's your heart rate? If
you had Gordon Ramsay do a workout tape, that's probably going to be Hal Gill.
Right.
Pretty
He'll throw a skillet at you. Right. When you're on the elliptical, he will throw a skillet at you. That's Hal Gill's workout.
I feel like he would do it with a smile, though.
No, he does. It's motivational, but right. It's got a smile and a laugh to it.
way to call me a fatty with a smile on your face, Hal. I appreciate that.
And when you're not looking, he'll video you and put it on social media.
So that's the video.
That's the video. It's basically a workout DVD without you actually knowing that it's a workout DVD.
That'll be his pitch. I'll secretly video you, I'll sell those videotapes, and that's how I'll make my money. Off of you, and you get nothing.
And the DVD cover can be you just looking off somewhere, not knowing that you're actually being videotaped.
I think to answer your original question, these machines today, they all have kind of like, you know, now you can do the mountain trails, and they all have, like, the workout is pedaling or walking. They all have scenery, right? Or you can go up against people. Like the Dwayne Wade commercial, right? With his wife that they show over and over and over again. Like you can rate, you know, you can race against. I think that's kind of where it is today. So I don't really think people watch videos to work out anymore. I don't think. I may be speaking out of turn. I don't know. Maybe people still
they're
do.
There. They're there if you want them.
Yeah. But Skillsy can bring it back. We'll talk to him at 11 o'clock. The Stanley Cup will be in the house. In fact, it's going to be in the house here shortly. We will talk to the carrier, the keeper of the cup, excuse me. Let me keep it official. The keeper of the cup will be in here at 10:15. So we'll talk to Howie Burrow at 10:15. We've got a great story for you at 10:45. Patrick Sharp from NBC Sports, of course, former player, former Blackhawk, former Dallas Star. We'll talk to Patrick Sharp in the third hour, along with You Just Made the List, Jim Wyatt. We got all kinds. We're going to be hitting all, covering a ton of ground here today, including last night. If you're watching, holy moly, were you watching in Winnipeg? I missed the entire first two periods. My son had baseball practice. I got home, watched the entire third period, and sat there in disbelief. And oh, by the way, guess what? Got things started for the Blues last night. Ryan O'Reilly. Guess what kind of goal it was? Answer it.
They had an extra
say
man.
It. Say it. Say it.
Power play.
Survey says, ding, a power play goal is what got the night started for St. Louis. Wow, what a concept. What a concept. It's amazing how that works. I looked it up last night. I just had to. I couldn't help myself. And there's just one team in the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's 16 teams that made it to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and yet one team is the only one that doesn't have a power play goal. Just one. Anyone care to guess? Anyone? Oh, wait a minute. We already know the answer. There were two teams with just one power play goal. Let's check out the significance of this. Can you name those two teams that just have one power play goal in the playoffs?
Are these teams still in it?
How about the New York Islanders and how about the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Pittsburgh Penguins? What's the significance of that?
They gone.
They gone. Home. Bye-bye. Work on the power play for next year. Although Tampa didn't have a problem with the power play. They were the number one power play unit in the regular season and finished with one power play goal in four games. And they're home. They're done. Pittsburgh Penguins also very, very good. Top five team in the power play in the regular season. One power play in the playoffs, and they're home. It's crazy how that works. But, yeah, what a comeback. St. Louis with three goals in the third period, including Schwartz's goal with 15 seconds left, and it was pretty. Out of midair, and
it was a great tip.
Winnipeg was stunned. It looked like the UT football game, the girl that everybody still has the gif of. Oh, you know, they got the hands on. It's like today's fan, hands on the head and the oh my look.
Yeah. I mean, the looks throughout the whiteout, and they have a great look in that building. As you know, Darren, when that place is full, you don't really see. It's not broken up. The fans aren't broken up by anything, right? It just looks like it goes straight up. There's two decks, but it's all white. But the faces on the crowd were about as white as the jerseys. And you had that just stunned, looked like they swallowed a hand grenade.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reaction some people had was just to turn and start walking up the aisles.
Oh, yeah.
That's the third loss they've had at home. And remember what has happened to them down the stretch. They have had this happen to them a few times. Stunning. Where they have let the lead slip away or they have given up a goal in the final seconds. Remember that? Remember the night after the Predators had that ugly loss in Anaheim where you're like, what's going on with this team? What's the deal? It was maybe the low point for the Predators, right? Because you're thinking, the division's gone. Can they hold on to second place?
The Ducks had lost 19-21.
The Ducks were awful.
They were awful.
It was a brutal ride out there. It took forever, and then they go in and lay an egg for the first 30 minutes, and it looked awful. Well, the same night, the Sharks scored a goal in the last 6 seconds, I think, in regulation to take one from the Jets. And we had the debate on the show, who feels worse, the Predator fans or the Jets fans? What's worse, losing to Anaheim or losing in the final seconds where you don't get a point? Well, it really sheds light on where the Predators are right now. Nobody's having an easy time that is supposedly one of the top teams in the league. As I told you, it was going to happen. Hurricanes won again last night.
It did. By the way, that place was rocking.
It was rocking.
Raleigh was rocking.
Raleigh was rocking. And that team is good. It's not a fluke that it's tied. Now, getting it tied is one thing.
Boy, is that thing chippy. That series is getting chippy.
Yeah.
Oof. Ovechkin is trying to rip everybody's head off. I don't know why he wants to fight everybody now.
Man.
He's turned into a crazed man in this series.
Yes, he has.
I mean, he is hunting people down constantly, looking to fight anybody and everybody. By the way, the Winnipeg...
Now, TJ Oshie may be out for the rest of the... Maybe for a while, just the rest of the series.
Let me just go on a disclaimer. I am not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio. But I've dislocated my shoulder, and that look of him skating off looked like somebody that couldn't move their arm and somebody that had popped their shoulder out of socket.
Yep.
That's just because I've done it, you know.
And we've seen that very injury happen in the same way. Awkward fall into the boards.
It looked like a guy that just dislocated his shoulder.
Yeah.
He could not move
And they
his
said,
arm.
You know, you don't usually get much detail, but they basically said he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, it was bad.
So the defending champions on the ropes, just like every team that is quote-unquote supposed to win in the first round.
Yep. That becomes, by the way, the Winnipeg-St. Louis series, the first five games have all gone to the road team. It's the fourth time it's happened now in NHL history. Only four times in 100 years, 100-plus years now. The last time was 15 years ago, Western Conference Final, Calgary and San Jose. So that becomes – no team has ever done a six. So if Winnipeg goes to St. Louis and wins, that'll be a feat nobody's ever done. The first six games of a seven-game series go to the road team. It's been done four times in the first five. It's never happened in six. We'll see if that happens because they now head to St. Louis where you know that place, Enterprise Center, is going to be jumping because they've got a chance to defeat Winnipeg and move on.
And let me tell you, you got to give Binnington credit. I wondered if he could hold tight. I wondered if he would crack. He has great defenders in front of him, but Winnipeg is getting opportunities. That game could have been blown open, but he made some good saves. He is playing well. That's a scary thing for whoever plays them next, whether it be the Stars or the Predators. Hopefully, we know what we hope happens. But I just think the most important thing, when you watch these games, you're going to watch another round of them tonight. Everything can change. Did we all think that the Sharks were done? I did.
No, they're still done. They won last night.
They played very well last night.
They're done. They're not going to win this.
I'm with you. Show me you can win in Vegas.
I picked San Jose, and I'm telling you I'm wrong. They're not going to win this series.
Okay, but I thought they were done. Martin Jones played pretty well last night.
He did, but they're not winning the next two.
I'll be impressed if they can go out to Vegas and win, but they did not quit.
Nope.
Things take turns.
They kept the series alive, and so back to Vegas they go. Golden Knights up 3-2. By the way, we've been giving you chances to get in the building with us on Saturday for Game 5, Saturday afternoon, 2 o'clock puck drop. You'll have another chance today. But by the way, just to pass this along, if you haven't been able to win through us, there are still very, very limited tickets available. Limited tickets available. Go to the NashvillePredators.com. NashvillePredators.com if you want to try to get in the house on Saturday afternoon. You've already decided you want to do that, I would jump on it right now because that limited is going to be gone here very shortly. NashvillePredators.com. We'll come back with the Stanley Cup in the house. That's next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, it's not often you sit in the studio or a wholesale link of Mount Juliet Game Studios. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and we have two guests. One guest can talk. The other one just sits there and looks pretty.
Wouldn't be a great radio interview, necessarily,
but we interviewed the second, the third, let's see, the fourth guest, we'll count that the fourth guest, it would be kind of boring. It's like interviewing a mascot on radio. It's not a very good interview.
Yeah, you can't really do it.
You can't really do it because Lord Stanley Cup doesn't really speak. It's just pretty.
Right.
Just
pretty. Now, on TV, I did see Nash do an interview on NHL Network with Stu Grimson. There was a lot of sign language and
Better charades. With the visual. Radio.
Right, radio
doesn't
just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Howie Burrow is also, he's the third guest. We'll count him because he talks, so he gets the third billing.
He should get top billing, really, because he can talk.
Howie, when you carry the cup, you do get top billing. So thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us. This is great.
You get a lot of attention, don't you?
Well, the cup does. I'm just,
But you're the keeper.
Yeah, I am. One of the keepers.
That's right.
There's three of us that do the majority of the travel, and then we have a couple other fellows that will come in and give us a break, and they get an opportunity to travel a little bit too.
I told you we've met Phil Pritchard in the past because he's been doing it a long time, but we haven't met you, and I was just asking, like, how do you guys divvy that up to, you know, your schedule?
Phil's in charge of the schedule, and he evens it up pretty good. He gives us all an opportunity to do different things. Usually we're on the road for about a week or so, week on, week off, stuff like that, and we get an opportunity to take turns. Sometimes we travel in pairs. Other times we're on our own. So a lot of great opportunities.
We haven't been able to pick it up or touch it yet. I don't know if we're going to be able to or not, but is it heavy? Kind of give us – you carried it in. You had the gloves on, just to make it official. You had the white gloves on.
Yes.
So what's the weight of the cup?
Officially 37.7 pounds.
Oof. Okay.
After your workout
After
the other day.
After my workout with Skillsy.
You might be a little bit
I feel like I'm ready.
You've recovered. Okay.
I feel like I've recovered a couple of days that I could lift that sucker. Skillsy has lifted that thing in 09.
Yes.
In fact, we took a picture of his name right there on the Stanley Cup. So what is it like, Howie? You're going to be here in town for a couple of days. Of course, game five is tomorrow afternoon between the Predators and the Stars. But I'm sure you guys get the same reaction everywhere you go, right? I mean, you just immediately that you become the folks, you know, the focal point of wherever you are because of who you've got with you. What's that like?
It's pretty incredible, actually. With as much as the cup has traveled, you always think that maybe everybody's seen it by now, but they haven't. And with social media, word gets around quick, and it's just amazing how people will literally come out of the woodwork to see it. And the crowds form quickly, and everybody's just thrilled to get a chance to see it, get a photo, touch it, maybe give it a kiss. It's just total excitement everywhere you go. Big smiling faces.
So you said you told us off air you came here from New York, and so you're now in Nashville. Are you flying Gary Bettman's private jet, or are you flying commercial? And if you're flying commercial, how does that work?
We usually fly commercial. So how it works is we'll check the cup in like any other baggage. But because it's oversized, we have a case that it travels in, and we have to go through TSA. Once they check it, we lock it up, and then it goes underneath like everything else.
So they just, I mean, do you ever get like weird questions? I mean, you have to probably explain yourself every time. Like, what do you have? Or
yeah, a little bit. Of course, they're always curious because of the size of the case, but we have to open it up. They need to see it. And, then you're usually getting, whoa, you know, like everybody's pretty thrilled. Like, wow, that's what it is. And then they kind of forget their jobs for a minute and they just want to get photos.
Right. It turns into a photo op.
Yeah. Do they ever not believe you? Yeah, sure. You've got the Stanley Cup in there. Yeah, come on.
Every once in a while.
Every now and then?
Yeah, every once in a while. It depends on what side of security you're going through at the airport, too. And they'll ask you, you know, what kind of baggage are you bringing? Oh, I got two bags. And, well, what's in the big one? Well, it's the Stanley Cup. Really? It's like, you know,
and they're, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And they're unhappy that they're
not. I haven't heard
that
one before. I was up in Toronto. Let's see. Well, it was right after the Predators were eliminated in Game 6 in the Stanley Cup final to Pittsburgh. It was 2-3 weeks later, and I went to the Stanley Cup – or the – Hockey Hall of Fame, and the replica was there. So unfortunately, I got a picture with the replica. I've seen the real one, but the replica was there at the Hall of Fame when I went. And I figured, because of the timing, that's 2-3 weeks after the Cup final. I'm sure the winning team is out on the road with that. So is that how it works? When it's over, then it spends time, and how does that work? Divvying up the time between everybody involved in the organization after the Cup final.
Yeah, it's a lot of work that's put into the schedule for sure. The Cup that's in Toronto is an official Cup. It doesn't travel. It was made officially for the Hockey Hall of Fame for the fans to see. This one right here, the Presentation Cup, is the one that always travels. It's presented on the ice. It travels around the world. It's on the road about 320 days a year. And the way it's set up is we try to do the scheduling geographically, so you're not bouncing back and forth across the continent and stuff. But we'll probably do a couple of waves back and forth, and we'll hit five or six cities or whatever while we're in North America. And then usually when we go to Europe, we'll do all the Europeans at the same time. So usually we're in Europe probably for about a week or so anyways, and probably, you know, be with five or six players maybe at that time.
So this one you have in here doesn't spend much time in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
No, very rarely. But when it does go back, it's usually there for our annual induction ceremonies in November. And then it gives our replica a chance to get out to be engraved too, because we want both to be the exact same in regards to that. The one real difference between the two trophies, though, is because this one is the one with all the history. It does have some errors and some
battle scars. Yeah.
Whereas the one in Toronto, everything's been corrected, and it's probably in slightly better condition than this one.
Ari Boro is with us. He is the keeper of the cup. We've got the cup in the studio right here with us on 102.5 The Game. And Howie, when people ask this all the time, and I know the answer, but some people that may have never seen it before, you always engrave the name of the champion and all the names of the people involved with the team. And so obviously it grows. So explain the process of how you keep adding an extra ring when, as the decades go by.
Well, there probably was a time when the cup was growing, and it's changed shapes over the years for sure. But now it stays consistently the same size. So the top half of the cup is permanent. Nothing's going to change. But on the lower half, there's five large bands. So what happens is the lowest band now, when that's completely filled, it takes 13 years to fill the band. Once that band is filled, they'll take off the top band, move everything up one level, brand new band is put on the bottom, and the one that they remove is retired to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So it never changes shape now, and it'll always stay this way. And then the bands that are put into the Hall of Fame are there for eternity now for the players to and their families and that to look at from generation to generation.
So it won't get longer per se as years go by. It's pretty interesting though. So when you go to find your name, when people who are on the cup get a chance to see it, like let's use Hal as an example there, are most of them comfortable grabbing it? Because I know a lot of people won't touch the cup right unless they have already won it,
right? And we encourage it too. If you have your name on the cup, you've earned the right to be able to pick it up again. When the players have their days, they're allowed to drink from it and celebrate with their family and friends and stuff. But a lot of players still have that superstition that they don't, if they've had a chance to maybe carry it once, they don't need to carry it again, but they do have that option. And some players won't go near it until they've won it. It's just all part of a player's superstition.
What about, does it carry over to fans?
It does, absolutely. I find that it's probably split, though. Some fans are just really over-enthusiastic. They want to touch it and hug it, give it a kiss, and that's fine. We allow that, but we don't allow them to pick it up in any way. And there are other fans that won't touch it because they don't want to jinx their favorite team. So it all depends on your personal preferences.
So what is your schedule the rest of the time you're in Nashville here? Will the fans get a chance to be around it?
There is a public appearance tonight, 5:30 to 7:30 at Whiskey Row. And I'm not sure exactly what's happening tomorrow yet because I'm still waiting on my schedule. But we're going to be in the city again all day tomorrow.
Dierks Bentley's Whiskey Row on Broadway from 5:30 until 7:30. So if you're going to be downtown, got a two-hour window. How does that thing do in chlorine? For some reason, I've seen a lot of pictures in pools over the years.
Yes, it has been in pools, but it's not supposed to be. I mean, the chlorine or the salt water is not very good for the metal, so we try to keep it out of there, but every once in a while, a team superstition, because it's been in there before, would like to try to do it again, but we really try to keep it out of there.
And how does that work, Howie? And I know a lot of this stuff, but for the sake of our audience and people who haven't heard this stuff, you've been asked this stuff probably a million times. But when, you said there's three of you, whether it's you or Phil or what have you, and you take the rounds with the winning team and the players' day, how does that work when they have it in their possession? Are you just in the background? Do you go away and say, I'll meet you here first thing in the morning? How does that work?
Well, we'll go and take the cup to them first thing in the morning, and then we're basically with them the whole day.
So you are there with them?
Absolutely. We're there to help, you know, with questions or the transportation of it, making sure that the cup is looked after properly too. And we're treated very well too by the fans, the friends, and the family and that. And, you know, we try to stay in the background too. We're not there to interfere at all, but we're there just to kind of make sure that things are going well.
Is part of your contract you can't write a book? Because I can imagine your book would be I would read it. I would buy it for sure. The well, stories you could tell with this thing?
There's many stories for sure, and they're all good. I mean, there's a lot of great memories that I have personally, and I'm sure my other coworkers and stuff, but there's no contracts that were signed. Everybody tells us that we should write a book, and I don't know. I mean, I love sharing the stories, but I haven't really thought about that yet. You know, maybe one day. You never know.
Were you Ovechkin's day?
I was. I went to Moscow with
him. Holy moly. how was that day?
You know what? He was very good with the cup. I almost think I have to defend him because I think everybody thinks it was going to be crazy. And I have to admit that I thought maybe it would be a little wilder too. But he realizes how hard it is to win the cup. And he was very respectful, shared the cup with his you know, with his family and his friends. And he had a great time. You know, we were in Moscow at the same time that the World Cup of Soccer was going on, and we went to Red Square, and the fans just swarmed us.
Wow.
Like, it was just an amazing sight to see. But, you know, it was really great. Fun time.
Wow. That's really cool. For people, Howie, who haven't been to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, what would be your best pitch to tell them why they need to do that at some point in the near future?
Well, first of all, they need to go to see the Stanley Cup. I mean, it may not be the official, you know, presentation cup, but it is there on display. And if you go up, it's on the second floor of the building that we're in, and it's an old Bank of Montreal historic building. It's got a great stained glass ceiling. It's wonderful, and you can see all the different plaques from all the Hockey Hall of Famers that are there now. But as you go out through the hall, there's a interactive games. We have trivia. We have different theaters you can go see. You know, there's international hockey, women's hockey, junior hockey. There's a little bit of everything. So if you've got a favorite player or a favorite team, there's going to be something there that you can see.
If you have your kids with you, absolutely. Howie just hit on it. Interactive, they will love it. Our son, I mean, we're like, hey, we would like to go see the rest of the Hall of Fame. Can you please step away and stop? Because he just wanted to do all the interactive stuff, and it's really cool.
Oh, absolutely. You could be a goalie and have used to be Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier shooting pucks on you like sponge pucks, or you could be shooting pucks at a goalie yourself and stuff. It's just for the kids. It's pretty amazing. Kids of all ages, really, but it's a lot of fun for them.
Yeah, and if you walk up on the building, you would have no clue the Hockey Hall of Fame is in that building. And then you get in there and you're like, whoa, because it just looks like a business building from the outside. You would walk right by it, I think, if you weren't aware where you were or where the Hall of Fame was.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's an old original bank made back in the 1860s.
Yeah.
So it does have some old antique type of qualities to it, old age construction and stuff. And it kind of blends in, and like I said, once you get into that building, you're right. You know, it's amazing. You wouldn't expect to see what you do.
No. So tonight, 5:30 to 7:30, Dierks Bentley's Whiskey Row on Broadway. Howie Burrow will be with the Stanley Cup. It'll be there, and hopefully it'll be in the house tomorrow for Game 5. You don't know your schedule yet, but you're going to be here until Sunday, so I'm sure a lot of people listening will get the chance to maybe get a little photo op with Lord Stanley Cup. We do appreciate you coming in. We would love to take some pictures, but to do that, we need to take a break.
Okay, thank you for having us.
Howie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Howie Burrow here on Darren and Donick. We'll come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Howie Burrow, keeper of the cup, was just in the house. Now, we took pictures during the break, and Marquise was probably like, you've been around the cup a ton. And I was like, actually, I haven't. I think that was the third time. Only the third time, the actual cup. And the other two times, I did not touch it. And I told Marquise before the show, if Howie's going to let me touch it, this time I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to touch it. Because I regretted it the other two times. So I did. Willie, you did not. You chose to cross your arms and not touch it.
That was my choice.
Have you touched it before?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? I know I would remember. You don't remember if you've touched the Stanley Cup?
Maybe 20 years ago.
Oh.
You know, I like the first year or two, they would, you know, to promote, the Predators had a team. You know, there were some events where the cup came. And I assume it was the cup. And I think I did probably touch it, probably more than once back then.
I didn't touch it before, and then the more I thought about it, I'm like, look, if you're a player or a coach, I get it. I totally get it. If you're a current player or you're a current coach, I get whatever, however you feel about it. But honestly, with fans and what am I going to do? I don't affect anything. I mean, come on. And I didn't do it before, and I'm like, if I get a chance, I'm going to touch it. I'm not changing anything. I totally get if players don't want to. I understand that. Because a lot of them are very superstitious.
You're saying I'm psycho for doing it.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying to each his own. I just don't think if you get an opportunity, like for example, if you go to Dirk Bentley's Whiskey Row tonight on Broadway from 5:30 to 7:30, you get a chance to take a picture, and I don't know the rules. I guess how he's going to allow fans to touch it. I say it's to each his own. If you want to touch it, man, do it. Like, that's probably the only shot you'll ever get, more than likely. Or if it's in the house tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena, and he doesn't know his schedule yet, but if there's an opportunity for fans to get pictures Saturday afternoon, no, I don't. If you don't want to, that's fine. I respect whatever anybody's feelings are. However, the touch it, don't touch it, whatever your approach is, I'm cool with it. I just didn't do it before, and I was like, if I ever get a chance again, I'm going to touch it. I'm going to do. I don't know why I didn't touch it before. I'm not changing anything. There's nothing I can do. I don't affect anything.
Okay.
So I touched it.
But
fact,
as you know,
I just didn't touch it. I grabbed it. I mean, I hugged it.
You did. But as you know, I have magical power. So I communicated with it telepathically.
Really?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you do that 20 years ago? Why'd you wait 20 years to communicate? You should have done it a long time ago.
Different times. Different times. different aspirations.
Okay.
It was more realistic back then that, you know.
Well, that's a
I'll
good
get
point.
Back to you. Get back to you another
fair.
Time.
Yeah.
Now we're in a window here.
Yeah, 1998, probably not really, you know, probably you're right. Things have changed since then. Let's go to John down in Murfreesboro. John, what's up?
Hey, guys. I hate to say it, but I just tuned in a little while ago, and I heard you guys talking about it, and I touched it, and I thought maybe I'd gotten Dr. Ruth or something. And it concerned me for a little bit, and then finally I heard about Lord Stanley's Cup. So, that being said, when it was there in Nashville during the All-Star Week, I took a picture with it, put my hand on it, and the Preds didn't win. So, if I get the chance again, I'm not touching it.
I did the same thing, John. I got the opportunity All-Star Weekend, and I didn't touch it. And I walked away, okay. And it didn't happen. And I walked away, and I said, you know what? The next time, if there's a next time, I'm touching it.
Well, and again, it is so funny how quirky and superstitious professional athletes are. I mean, just there's so many little idiosyncrasies. You know, you see the pitchers going out to the mound, and they never want to step on the first or third base line. They hop over it. And they just all these quirky things. I don't know if you remember, his name was Ray. He was the kicker for the San Francisco 49ers years ago. But he never looked up at the goalposts when he came on the field. Whoever his holder was, for a while it was Joe Montana, before that was Steve DeBerg, he would put his hand on their shoulder. He would depend upon them to place the tee and line it up, but he would never look up at the goalpost because it made him superstitious that he would miss by looking up. And it just, you know, there's quirkiness everywhere. I love the tradition of not touching it. I love the tradition of not, you know, touching the playoff or the conference championship trophies. I think that's absolutely correct because that's not the final goal. But I love this tradition of hockey, especially.
Well, I'm glad you kept listening, John. And you realized it wasn't an awkward conversation.
Well, and I don't mean it's not an awkward conversation because, you know, again, people are tuning in, listening to you guys, and it's kind of like, yeah. Okay, where'd we take this? And not that you guys haven't had awkward conversations before. You know, I remember it's the first time in my life I've ever heard the term man spa on your show. It was D. Mason who said it years ago, and he said man spa, and I went home and looked it up because I was concerned. And now we got Robert Kraft, who's taking it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, we were not talking about Jupiter, Florida back then.
Exactly. I mean, no freaky deaky, but it just is, you know, one of those things we just got to be cognizant of. And again, everything's open on your show, and I appreciate that. But, you know, again, great topic, and you guys have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too, John. I do remember Band Spa.
You know, you got to watch out for taking things out of context.
Like, be careful. People might not know what you're talking about here. Man Spa. Be careful.
You know, it's funny how some players will not tell you about their superstitions. They just will not.
Yeah.
They can be asked about it and everybody laughing. They won't talk about it. In fact, game one, I think Kara Hammer was in the locker room asking different players. All they would talk about basically was the beard. That's all they would be comfortable because it's out there. Like, everybody knows you're growing a beard, right? But other stuff?
Kara Hammer is asking us on Twitter. She wants to know who touched the cup. Willie did not.
Arms crossed.
Me, D-Mac, I did. I hugged it. Chase McAbabe, he touched it. Marquise, he touched it. We all touched it. Kara, we all did, but Willie. Willie had his arms crossed like a snob. But to each his own. I said I will not.
But what's funny about you?
I will not pile on. It's to each his own.
But what's funny about you is you asked first. She was like, "Is it okay if I touch it?" And then he explained it, and then you was like, "Oh, don't mind if I do." Well, and then you put your arms like right around.
I don't want Howie jumping across the table at me if I just grabbed it and started hugging it. I mean, he did have white gloves on. He can punch me, and nobody would have any evidence. No DNA. We'll come back. Reed Besh. We'll tell you about his story to close out the first hour of Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren and Donick on this Friday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Hey, it's the end of the week. Game 5 is tomorrow afternoon. You should be having a good day. We are. Lord Stanley's Cup was in the house. Howie Burrow joined us a couple segments ago. Now we've got Reed Besh in here. His Man of the Year campaign. He's got a unique story that we want you to hear. He's a huge Predators fan. He's a huge Titans fan. He's a fan of Nashville. He's a Nashvillian. And now he's going to tell you a little bit more about how you can help him. Reed, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Did you get a picture with the cup?
Absolutely. I'm with you all. I did not touch it, though. I had my
sign.
Reed and I
are on the same page. Yes.
Exactly.
So that was, and I said, that's fine. I mean, to each his own. So you chose, because you told us during the break, you are a creature of habit.
Absolutely.
You have superstitions, and you have an approach to every Predators game. So
absolutely.
Tomorrow, how will you go through leading up to a 2 o'clock puck drop? What is it? You said 30 minutes is when 30 minutes before is when everything begins with you.
Absolutely. So I have different for home and away for sure. I got two different jerseys or so. But the 30 minutes before, TV has to be on the Pred station. I turn it on immediately. 20 minutes before game, I put my jersey on. 3 minutes before the game, I put on my hat that I wear every time. And I do that for every Preds home game. I got to. Even if I'm going to the arena, I will not wear my jersey until 20 minutes before puck drop.
Interesting.
I got to do my part.
You don't
as a
mess
fan.
With the winning streak.
Yeah, exactly. You
don't mess with what works. Each fan's got to come up with those.
I love
those
hearing
things.
These stories. I do. And the fact that you do that, and hockey season's long.
Oh, yes.
Especially when you're doing a lot of winning like the Predators.
Absolutely.
It's long. So that's really cool. So let's get down to business. Let's tell everybody about your story, and we'll just kind of go from there. So how did this all begin for you? Because you're a young man.
Yes.
So this obviously probably took you and everybody in your family and your friends and your circles back a bit, because
Absolutely.
This is not supposed to happen at your age.
No. So I graduated from Rhodes College in 2017 with a business degree, had just left. I moved back home to kind of save up some money for my own apartment. My parents asked me to help clean out the garage, and it was like the worst thing ever at that time. You know, you're a kid, you don't want to help do anything at your parents' house. But so I pick up a box and I twisted the wrong way, and all of a sudden I heard a pop in my hip. Now, I played sports all through high school and in college, so having pops and creaks lifting is nothing to me. I'm used to it. But this one was a little different. There was some pain that just wouldn't go away. So later on that evening, I kind of told my mom, I was like, this is really not going away. Something's going on. She took me to the emergency room. They confirmed that there was no bone damage, but I had, in fact, torn the labrum in my hip. I was like, okay, what does that mean? They said, follow up with an orthopedic. You'll look at surgery. okay, it's not ideal, but, you know, I'm used to it. I've had injuries before, so it's just going to be rehab and I'll be back out.
Because you played football, right?
Correct. Yes, I played football all 4 years at Rhodes College. So I went in for the orthopedic. He said, yes, you probably tore your labrum. Let's get an MRI to confirm this, and insurance will help with the surgery, and we'll be on your way to recovery. So I went. I got the MRI in the machine. The machine broke on me the first time, the MRI machine. It was, they were like, the coil's not working. You're not getting any pictures. You're just wasting your time. Like, awesome. That's what you want to hear. So I had to reschedule, came back in the second time, and the doctor called me about an hour after the MRI images got to him, and he said, Reed, your bone marrow looks different. Go get blood work, and we'll talk about surgery. Well, I don't know what bone marrow is at this point, so I was like, did I chip the bone? Did I make it worse? What's going on? So January 15th of 2018, about a month after me lifting that box, I went, got blood work done, went home, and the doctor called me that evening saying, Reed, I don't like to give bad news, but we caught it early. You have evidence of acute leukemia. Vanderbilt Medical Center is waiting for you. Bomb dropped. I mean, me and my parents are just like, are you sure? Like, this kid has a hip that's hurting. And he said, well, what's happening is you have cancer cells that are actually rubbing in your hip the wrong way, causing it to inflame and hurt even more. I went in the very next day to Vanderbilt Medical Center, and they told me about 85% of my body was already cancer cells in a month.
Wow.
It was, that's how fast acting acute leukemia is.
So if you had not had the incident with your hip,
correct,
when would you have found out?
We have no idea. I was not scheduled for any physicals, nothing. I mean, it could have been detrimental to me. I was exhibiting no symptoms of anything until that hip hurt. And so that's what they were saying. It could have been months before we figured everything out, and it would have been a lot harder at that point.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Now, you formed a bond, I remember, with Ryan Johansson. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I have no idea how this doctor did it. I call her Dr. J. She has some type of connection with Ryan Johansson, and he actually visited me in the hospital. One of the best things in my life was seeing that. I had just heard not some bad news, but not the greatest news, that round one didn't work. I was going to have to go through another round of chemotherapy. It was going to be more intense and probably some more side effects. And all of a sudden, Dr. J comes in. I have a surprise for you. And I was like, okay, you're a Blackhawks fan. I don't know how much I can believe what you're saying right now. She goes, I have a Predator surprise for you. I was like, now I know you're lying. I mean, come on. And he walks around the corner, and he just walks in, and for 30 minutes just spent time with me. I mean,
wow.
Just talked. We talked about hockey. We talked about school. We talked about everything. What I said, the best part of that was, for 30 minutes, I wasn't a patient. For 30 minutes, I was just a fan getting to talk to one of his idols, and it was incredible.
So tell us how the process has gone, because as you said, you've gone through a lot, and here you are. You're full of energy. You're feeling good.
Yes, sir.
So just what was that like, just the fight?
The fight for me has been humbling. So I've gone through 5.5 rounds of chemotherapy. I went through rough chemotherapy. I went through maintenance chemotherapy, all different kinds. I ended up having a bone marrow transplant in August. My donor actually is an international donor. We don't know who this is yet. Hopefully we'll get to meet him this August, or her. We're not sure yet. But out of the 17 million people on the registry, I matched with 3 total people. Oh. And it blew my mind. I mean, Whoa. It was the same odds as the NCAA perfect bracket. That is the same odds as making a perfect bracket. Is what
Are
my
you
donor
serious?
Was.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. So getting to meet that donor is just going to be incredible. But yeah, it was a long fight. It was lonely at times. Other times I would see the support. I had friends, family, strangers just reaching out to support. But for my thing that stayed consistent, you can ask anyone, for my fight was stay positive. No matter what it was, I wanted to make people laugh. So I would play jokes on the nurses on the 10th floor of Vanderbilt. I hid pictures of myself that I was not supposed to be doing, like wearing my favorite t-shirt or, you know, buzzing my head, doing anything, just trying to bring others happiness or joy through one of the toughest parts of your life. So
you spent almost 2 months
Correct.
On the 10th
yep.
floor?
I spent 56 consecutive days on the 10th floor. Got to come home and start outpatient treatment, which was a blessing. But then I also had to go in every weekend for about 2 months, or roughly 2 months, until it led up to my transplant. So.
And so how have things been since the transplant?
Ooh, that is it's a whole new ball game, is what I said. So after my transplant, for 100 days, I had to have 24/7 care. And so I got to know my mom real well. I joke and everything like that. I mean, we pushed each other's buttons like you normally would if you had 24/7 care. But I am extremely grateful because we were told some cancer patients can't have a transplant because they don't have that care. You have to have 24/7 watch because if a fever spikes, you have to go in the hospital. It was 101.5. I was in the hospital. No questions asked. So for 100 days, it was testy. It was me and mom getting on each other's nerves, me and dad getting on each other's nerves, my aunt, my brother. I mean, all family and friends knew that it was necessary, but it was hard. After the 100 days is now when I've officially got to do a little bit more. I still wear my mask today just because my immune system isn't quite where they want it to be, but it's more precautionary now. I'm getting able to do more things, but my energy level still isn't where it once was. You know, I'm hoping to get back to it. And I'm actually going now to physical therapy for my hip because in the fall or the early next year, I'll have to actually have surgery on my hip, which is what started this whole thing. So I still got a long way left to go.
Wow.
We are doing stuff to raise money for you all day today here on the airwaves at ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we're going to give somebody who donates to Team Reed until 6 o'clock tonight. They'll be qualified to win a VIP draft experience with ESPN's Golic and Wingo and First Take at Nissan Stadium next Friday. Of course, the NFL draft is going to be in our city. First round is next Thursday. Mm-hmm. Reed, your main goal is to find cures for blood cancer.
Yes, sir.
So any amount will help.
Absolutely.
Go to our Twitter account, at 1025 The Game, to learn how to donate. And so you've been nominated for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society as the Man of the Year candidate.
Correct.
And what has that been like for you to now go through all this and now tell your story?
It's been incredible. I say just one of the best experiences of my life. You know, I got to see firsthand what the LLS as an organization can do for a patient and a patient's family. So in order for me to give back in just the slightest has been amazing for me. I know the LLS as an organization does so much more. I mean, they out of the 34 cancer researches for new chemotherapies in 2017, the LLS was part of 31 of them. I mean, it is incredible the amount of research that they go to developing and really learning about how to cure these cancers. And then they also take care of the patient's family. So I remember for me, some of my medications were up in the thousands to tens of thousands of dollars. And my family was looking around like, oh, what, you know, we got to figure out, because it's honestly a do or die at that point for these medications. And the LLS stepped in and said, we're going to help with our copay assistance. We're going to help your family out to get this medication that you need.
Wow. That's fantastic. We'll keep getting the word out.
Thank you.
We're going to try to raise some money for you. Best of luck. Keep fighting the fight. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing really good things. Thanks for coming in, and we'd love to follow up with you again here real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Especially if all of this stuff that you do works and there's a parade one day.
Yeah, there's got to be a parade here. Exactly. Everyone do it.
All right. I hope we're talking to you in June.
Sounds good.
Reed Besh, we're going to keep getting the word out for him. He's a unique story, a unique individual, and we really appreciate him stopping in, getting a chance to hang out with him. We're going to keep getting the word out and doing some good things for Reed Besh today. We will come back. Hal Gill will kick things off in the second hour of Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game.